There's no ESPN without our next guest, who is on the line right now. Needs no introduction, obviously, and kind of consider him also an honorary Canadian, weirdly. I'm going to miss the Grey Cup highlights on Countdown, and definitely an honorary Western New Yorker. Chris Berman on the line right now. Chris, thanks so much for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Good morning, Ben. Good morning, JD. Good to kind of feel I'm in Toronto a little bit. I really respect being an honorary Canadian. There are a lot of folks that know that I feel that way. And yeah, Western New York, I mean, it speaks for itself. It's a fun time of year, and we'll get those Grey Cup highlights next year. Don't you worry. Well, at least you had a Grey Cup quarterback play a game for Arizona. That was interesting.
That's right, and he was amazing.
Especially the picture of him in the parade. That was good to see also.
Actually, that was the highlight. That was the highlight.
Yeah, I mean, hey, look, anytime we can promote the CFL, it's a fun deal. So we look forward to it next year.
Yeah, and it is phenomenal, and of course Canadians do appreciate it. But yeah, man, you are a Connecticut guy. I read that your relationship with the Bills specifically started with seeing their training camp in 1988 and being sort of the first guy to, yeah, jump on their bandwagon and see this team kind of coming together and starting to promote that they would be a threat in the AFC. But I couldn't find where the catchphrase origin began, and I'm sure you've told the story, but could you share it with us?
No, you know, now that's the second time Peter King asked me the other day, I think it was Peter, where did it come from, or Mike Greenberg did, actually. And I don't know exactly. It was on a primetime highlight, either 90 or 91 when they were maybe against the ropes, probably 91, 90 they kind of rolled. And, you know, they dug deep, and it was not the Frank Reich game. It was before that, the playoff game, which we've just relived with him bringing the Colts into Buffalo a couple weeks ago. And you can't relive it enough, by the way. And I just said it probably under the highlights. It was, yeah, like, this sounds pretty good. Even though in those days, with those players, I mean, they weren't like they were a 6-10 team and then they won some amazing game once every 3 weeks and I pulled it out, you know, and it caught on, and the people of Buffalo or Western New York just, and all those players, and now it's a rallying cry. It's not so much me. I mean, it was something that, you know, in your business, my business, the same. You not like you throw stuff up wildly, but you throw a lot of stuff out there. And
oh, yeah.
When it sticks, you run with it, right? And I don't know that I run like Thurman Thomas, but at his number 34 number retirement a couple of years ago, he asked if I could come in and MC the thing at halftime. You know, it's quick and everything, so it's not about me. I'm there for like 2 minutes, and I felt like a rock singer who then, like, Billy Joel laying out during Piano Man and hears everyone sing his words. And I went, you know where I'm going here, Buffalo. All I said was, no one circles. And I stopped, and there were 70,000 people doing it. And it was like, darn, I guess this stuck.
I really do believe that the Buffalo, if you pulled Buffalo, like, what would you rather, Billy Joel concert or Chris Berman comes in, packs the stadium, and
especially
does
now.
Nobody circles. Yeah, it's like, no doubt about it. Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
I don't know about that. I thank you.
I think it's close. Yeah. I think you do. At least on this station, sports radio station, like, you'd probably be a unanimous landslide. But, okay, I'm curious, too, even with it, just how you started to feel that relationship with the city, because now you nail that catchphrase, right? And you're right. You throw stuff out there, and some stuff sticks. I think it's kind of like being a stand-up comic in a certain way. Like, you work out the material, and every once in a while, it resonates. But now we have social media, where the second you do something, if it works, you kind of find out, or if people hate it, you find out. But for you, like, when did you start to feel like, oh, wow, this is a thing, and this city cares about it a lot? The way that I feel about them and the way that I observe them, they have a real vested interest in not just, like, the show, but me personally.
Well, it goes back to 88 now. You guys talked about it at the beginning here, that I picked them for the Super Bowl. I was doing 12 training camps. Well, I don't want to get it so long. I don't know how much time we have, but, you know, I picked them for the Super Bowl. They were 7-8 the year before. And what are you, out of your mind? They started 4-0. They lost to the title game to the Bengals. But, I mean, if picking Buffalo was really, you know, they weren't too much removed from 2-14 or something like that. So the city of Buffalo, and they're not alone, but let's just talk about it because they're your neighbors. I say that with a U, neighbors. People just dump on the city, oh, snow, oh, this. And I didn't go nuts saying stuff, but I backed their football team. And that to them made me one of them. And I didn't do it for that reason, honestly. But by the time the playoffs started, this is 88, young team, Jim Kelly, young, Thurman Thomas, a rookie, Andre and Bruce, young, et cetera, et cetera. A couple of veterans, and, you know, Marv Levy, et cetera, Bill Polian. But I went to do a piece before their first playoff game, and it was like on a Thursday, and I flew up and did it and was taking the flight back to Hartford at 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And we got to the airport. And there's TV cameras, and there are 100 people, and there's Bill Polian, the general manager, Hall of Famer, presenting me the key to the city. And I think not the mayor, but the number two, you know, head of the city council, or whatever it is, was right there. And we were just trying to go to the plane. And so this before the playoffs started, like, I am one of them. And I didn't do it to do that way, but my team's, I've always supported the National League teams that don't get any other support. I'm not saying anything's wrong with the Dallas Cowboys or certainly the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, these are teams that are following everywhere, right, fellas? But Buffalo, San Diego, Tampa back in the day, Seattle, almost the four corners of the United States, as it turns out. These aren't – they're not nationally followed teams, and I kind of found it was fun to be the voice of them, but the Bills took on another life. And, again, I'm going on and on and on. Back in the days of Jim Kelly, et cetera, one of my best friends, I was up there several times a year, three, four times a year, a couple times to do stuff on the Bills, Jim's golf tournament, maybe something else. So I felt it. It wasn't like just from afar. You know, like I'm there three, four times a year. I get it. And it's a love affair that it's been professionally at the top of the list of anything that I've accidentally stumbled into in 41 years.
Yeah, it's worked out rather well, I would say, talking to Chris Berman, obviously. And, yeah, that 87 team, you mentioned it, they were 7-8, so a bigger surprise than I guess this Bills team, who did make the playoffs last year and a very disappointing end to their playoff run. But I don't know if anybody, in fact, I know, nobody expected this. And for people to really give them more than a puncher's chance against Patrick Mahomes and that Chiefs team, can you compare the feeling of thinking that 88 team was going to go deep compared to how you felt about this Bills team this season?
Yes, because... and there's a little bit of a difference, and we're not going to go down personnel for personnel, but no one could have in August seen that Josh Allen, who we knew could run and throw, and this is going to be interesting. No one could predict this, that Stephon Diggs was a great signing, but 120 catches or whatever the number is added to the playoffs, et cetera. What they had was a defense that got them in the year before Josh got there in 17, and they lost the playoff game 10-3, and a defense that I know that gave up the lead to Houston, but that was the calling card. Now, so you had a foundation, and unlike the Bills team of 88, which you know, a lot of your fans up there certainly remember, this team did not totally come from nowhere. They at least... Some of them had tasted the playoffs, albeit a defeat, and understood, ooh, this is different. So there's a little bit of difference, but an unbelievably ascending quarterback, which Jim Kelly certainly was, he had had more track record with the USFL before he came to Buffalo, but Thurman Thomas was a rookie. Now, Bruce Smith was the number one draft. In other words, you could see the needle was pointing straight up. Now, add to the fact that the division was, quote, open, with Tom Brady not in New England, and New England last year, you could see, was not the same anyway. That's why they lost right away in the playoffs. So the division was open. The door was open. I have to go back and look at what the 88 August AFC East looked like, but there's no need to waste your time. Was that open? Apparently it was. I mean, they busted right through. I assume Miami was pretty good with Shula, but I'd have to look it up. But there is a similarity because this team started out 4-0, I believe, and so did 88. Now, yeah, I could be mistaken. Now, then they lost their couple of games. You know, it was weird, the Tennessee and then the Chiefs, but other than the Hail Mary, they haven't lost since, right? So what is it, 10 of 11, 11 of 12? And that team was 4-0, and they got beat by a Chicago team, the Bears, who were really good, you remember. But they kept rolling. So as far as the way the season has gone, there are quite a bit of similarities. And now they've each reached the championship game, 88. And now this team for the first time. And I think the narrative, and there's many others with the other teams in this, fellas, but the narrative of the Bills, I mean, you have to pinch yourself and go, wait a minute, the Buffalo is one game from the Super Bowl? Like, you know, you hope. Well, we had a pretty good team. Oh, we almost beat the Patriots. I mean, I'm talking about the last 15, 20 years. Wait a minute. You mean they're one? I had to think about that this morning. Wait a minute. The Bills are 60 minutes from a Super Bowl? So did we really know that was coming? We knew winning the division was possible. So therefore, I guess getting this far was possible. We don't know about Patrick Mahomes. Probably won't know till the weekend, right, guys? So, I mean, to try to handicap it with or without him here early in the week is great. As we speak, he's not playing, but that's going to take 5 to 7 days, I believe. So, but the Bills won last week with defense. And this is what their calling card was going into the season. Offense was not going to be the necessary calling card. So now they've won games both ways. Money games both ways. That can only be money in their pocket.
Yeah, and so much of that doubt, I think, that crept in for those couple of losses early in the year that you mentioned had to do with the fact that people went and said, well, okay, what we saw with Josh Allen was against the Jets and it was against the Dolphins. And listen, this is a guy that's not going to take that big of a leap this year. And what we've saw is a little bit of an overreaction. And then all of a sudden he puts a full season together and he looks like this for the entire year. Does he remind you of anybody? Because it is kind of a hard placement for us. We've gone back and forth on a few guys.
That's a good question. So let me think. So there are parts of his game that he makes throws flat-footed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to say he's Aaron Rodgers or Mahomes yet, okay? I mean, I don't think we want to, although he's the next one. You know, and Russell Wilson started the year that way and didn't end it that way. But, I mean, making throws, so the throwing is not so much running left and throwing right, which I don't know how Mahomes does it and Aaron can do it, but almost. So he can throw it 45 yards flat-footed, not even wind up and fire, which is amazing. He runs really well, but he's a little more forceful of a runner, certainly. I don't mean like stick the head down and beat Earl Campbell. But so I'm trying to work this out of my head. I wish I had a, you know, I don't want to say Brett Favre because that was different too. But you know, going back 15, 20 years, your running quarterbacks couldn't throw like this. You wouldn't compare him to the physical skills of Michael Vick. I mean that, because Michael was so fast, right? So he's a little bit of, you can mention a lot of names. But as far as speed behind Lamar Jackson or Michael Vick at the quarterback position, he runs maybe like Steve Young did. Now, Steve was an unbelievably accurate passer the minute he stepped into the league. This is good. Now, I'm working this out as we talk. Just like, you know, in school, show your work on the math thing, and if you don't get the whole equation right, if part of your work is good, you get partial credit. So apologize for this. He runs a little like Steve. Steve was a little more forceful of a runner, but very fast. So running like Steve, but no one guy. I'd like to say he's the second coming of what? What have you guys come up with? It's the first I've thought about comparing him to someone.
So this is what I really liked about your answer, is that I do think that he's a prototype. Like, he's the first version of this that we've seen, because I can't remember a quarterback that had accuracy issues the way that Josh Allen had them, who all of a sudden turned it around and was an accurate deep ball thrower. And I know that Diggs deserves a lot of credit for that. He's been incredible. But, yeah, we haven't seen that. And I feel the same way as you do, is that if there was a closest guy, I would say that he does feel a little bit like a bigger Favre. But it's so hard to do those things because... Yeah, it's 1 year of this, right? And it always feels disrespectful to Hall of Famers, to legends like Favre, when you do that kind of stuff. But yeah, he's this balance of athleticism and arm strength and now accuracy, and it's a lot. He does not have, like, he doesn't have a lot of guys that I think that historically you could just go say, like, okay, this is the guy that he is, this is the guy that he looks like, because there have been so many of these quarterbacks that haven't worked out. That's kind of the legacy of the Josh Allen, is so many quarterbacks that you look at in the draft and say, well, he's got all the intangibles, he's got all the physical tools, but he doesn't have the accuracy, or he turns the ball over too much, and they don't work out. Like, it's the, I don't know, this is kind of maybe unfair, but it's like the Kyle Bowlers, right? Where you're like, man, look at this guy. He can throw the ball down the field from one knee and it doesn't work out. Josh Allen's the dude who I think it did work. This is the guy that when you're in a draft room from now on and you do see the kid with all the intangibles, you're going to say, hey, we know he went to a weird school. We know that he can't hit the guy on the move yet, but look what happened with Josh Allen, and maybe this is going to propel us to taking a different pick or a different approach to quarterback development.
That's very well thought out and said. You know, Brett was different, and I lived that. Mike Holmgren being one of my best friends, and Brett has become it. So let's not compare him to Brett, but I kind of saw, well, Brett would run around and create. There was a lot of Fran Tarkenton in him, too. So that you can't quite compare them, but, I mean, Brett was a bigger guy, you know what I mean? And he ran downfield, and if he had to lower the shoulder, he would do it like Josh does, right? But Brett was more accurate year one and two. He just threw more picks. I mean, that was just but, by the way, let me get an aside for a minute. My favorite answer in 40 years of football interviews, and I said it when I was MC at the Hall of Fame and Brett went in. It was an occasion later in his career. It turned out not the end. We went to all the records, and I didn't tip him on this. I said, Brett, what does playing 300 straight games mean to you, or whatever? What does it mean to have the most wins? What does it mean to have throw for the most yards? Each one was a great answer. And then I said, well, Brett, you've thrown way more interceptions than anybody else. What does that mean to you? And he kind of looked at me like, wait a minute, I wasn't prepared for this. He smiled like a little kid and said, means I was trying. It's my favorite answer in 40 years. At any rate, that's a Brett Favre story. For Josh, obviously the coaching, but let's give him. He obviously, I was at one practice last year, in the middle of the year. The coach, I spoke to the team a little bit, but it's not like I'm not Newt Rockney or anything. And plus, it's a practice. The seriousness, and you see it in his eyes every play. I mean, he smiles, sure, we've succeeded, but there's the dedication. He must have known, without saying, like, I can actually do all this. What do I have to do to not so much make a quantum leap, but I can be accurate. I can make the throws. So he took upon himself, with the coaching, Brian Daboll and Dorsey, et cetera, the game has slowed down unbelievably in year three for him. The professional game has slowed down. It'll slow down more 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. But he's let the game come to him. Now, you could say that. We're not out there with the 290-pound guys who can run almost as fast as me, trying to hit me. It's slowing down. Yeah, right. So The game has slowed, and how he willed that along with the coaching is a credit to himself and the drive that he must have. I don't claim to know him very well, but I look forward to doing that because, oh, I've left out the biggest similarity between that team and this team. He has embraced the city, and the city has embraced him. He's all Buffalo. And Jim was from Pittsburgh. It's not that far away, right? And Josh is California. But he's embraced it, and they have embraced him, and it's real. And it's awesome.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to do something selfish here because I just watched the Tiger Woods documentary on HBO. And I don't know if you've seen it, Chris, but you're in it.
I haven't seen it yet. No, I look forward to it.
Yeah, you're in the second half because you were hosting, of course, the 2008 U.S. Open playoff against Rocco Mediate on a broken leg. And, man, Rocco was such a likable guy. It just brought me back to that moment. What did you think would happen to Tiger that week and then his career beyond that when you realized what kind of serious problem he had?
Well, are you talking just the physical at that point? Because at that point It was just the physical, right? I mean, the next week, I mean, I'll put it, I was kind of, the next week on Wednesday, the tour comes to Hartford, to the Travelers, which I'm at and involved and playing the Pro-Am, and that's not really part of the story. I wasn't going to be threatening Tiger Woods on the golf course anytime soon. So, but I remember, like, the Golf Channel and three other cameras came over to me as I went to hit, you know, 12 bad warm-up tee shots so I could go out and not clobber anyone, you know, in front of people. And that's when it was, oh, he, you know, here's the knee, you know, he's knee surgery, it's going to be 9 months or whatever it is, really. So I remember it like yesterday, not only the Open, but here's the news, you know, in the golf community that week, which I'm not every week. You know, the stuff at Broken, if you're talking after that, it depends if you're going both ways, but I talked to him quite a bit at the Open at Pebble in 10. And, you know, you didn't get the feeling then that all of this, he was starting, you could see that physically 2 years later he was okay. And you know his will to win, the comment we just had about Josh. I mean, this times anybody times 10 is Tiger. So as far as number of wins, you knew that I didn't think it was, uh-oh, it's over now because of one knee injury. So at that time, if you want to go back to 08 to 10, where both things happened to him, right? You don't know how much the noise and everything's going to get to him, although for him, he blocked that out when in the best of times. And you should see him on driving ranges at the U.S. Open, which I covered 30 or 35 of them. He would walk on the range and everything stopped and his head didn't turn at all. Say hello to anybody or this. I don't mean nobody, but you know what I'm saying. And so you didn't think he would be derailed. And, you know, he won after that. I mean, he's, you know, and now his time is gone. Now we're much later. Now we're in his 40s. He was still in his younger 30s when this was happening, right? So, I look forward to seeing that. One of my favorite golf interviews, the Open, when he was a youngster and he won at Pebble in 2000 by 15 shots. He was 12 under, second was plus three, which is a joke, right? We had the Masters earlier, but that's a joke. That's Pebble Beach. This isn't, you know, your favorite Muni, obviously, right? And he came onto the, our set was on one of the piers off, the pier off the fourth hole, and he was out there, and he was still a kid, and we're talking, and we got the trophy with us, and we're going through some of the names, and his, like, eyes were sparkling, like, reading them, and that's my favorite personal Tiger moment. We even said, hey, look, I showed, look, World War II, no names, World War I, no names, you know, so, yeah, look, but it, just looking at Nicklaus and Palmer and well, Arnie won one, but you get my point. That was like this young kid. kid with sparkles in his eyes who just beat everybody by 15 shots. So that's just a Tiger story that I was fortunate enough to be around at the time. So, hey, he made a generation of golf fans.
No doubt.
He still does. Say no more, right?
Yep. Chris, you made a generation of fans of sports highlights. There's no doubt about that. And we really appreciate you coming on with us today.
This was great, man. Thanks so much.
Well, that's very kind. I'm not sure that's true, but highlights are kind of the lifeblood. And I'm thrilled that NFL primetime was always on in Canada. Mm-hmm. You know, and our pregame show was too back then, right? Mm-hmm. Countdown or game day when it was. But NFL primetime being on in Canada, the letters I get from north of the border about that show were second to none. And you're very kind. And this is a really good interview. This is fun. So
fun for us.
We're playing hockey again. By the way, I loved watching hockey in August. I know that wasn't the plan, but I had a good time watching the playoffs in August. So, football, and then you can fill me in on what I've missed with the pucks. Happy New Year to you guys, okay?